Hi, my name's Robert. Before I get started, I'm going off script because I just want to recognize the lovely lady here, Ina, Gabby, and Bill. They work so hard putting these things together all around town. And can we just give them a big hand because they really have worked hard. In my little town, me and my friends senior year of high school, you could always find us right up front at any rock and roll concert of consequence. In 1975, most of those shows took place at the Spectrum in Philadelphia. It was just a short ride over the Walt Whitman Bridge to my hometown of Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Most folks there bought their tickets at the mall with Ticketron, but me and my friends, we knew better. Back in those days, the venue held the tickets, the best tickets for themselves. And concerts went on sale on a Saturday, and we figured out if you showed up in the middle of the night, you could score yourself some killer seats. And we did that for so many great shows. We saw Pink Floyd, Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, Carlos Santana. The list went on, and we were always right down front. But in 1975, there was no show that had a greater buzz than The Who. Now, they were getting rave reviews everywhere they played, but the December Philly gig was going to be really something special because it was the last date of the year in the United States. And many of you might have known that The Who used to destroy the stage at the end of shows. Well, they weren't doing that much in the mid-70s, but this show, the promise was they were going to totally obliterate it. Now, I got a call from a friend of mine from a phone booth. You remember phone booths? He was in the parking lot of the Spectrum. He says, "Hey, dude, you're not going to believe this. You got to get your butt down here right now. There are already three people in line." That was 8 days before tickets were going on sale. Well, it was late October, and if I was going to take on an adventure and spend a week on the steps of the Spectrum, I was going to have to deal with school and also have to deal with how I was going to get out of the house. Now, fortunately, I had a little bit of flexibility on the home front. You see, my folks had been divorced. My mom got remarried to a guy with five kids. Me and my sister kind of got the short end of the stick on that one. And you remember that TV show, The Brady Bunch, how two families come together and it's just perfect harmony? You know, that was certainly not the scene at my house. So I had a little bit of leeway with my mom. She said basically if I got good grades, she let me pretty much come and go as I please, and I did. But on that Sunday, when I drove down to the Spectrum with my best friend, Brent, you know, to be honest, we weren't really thinking about logistics. We just wanted to secure our place in line. So we got down there on the Sunday, and security greeted us and issued us bracelet number 14 and 15. They recorded our names in this book, and they basically told us that they were going to do random roll checks throughout the week. And if we missed even a single one, we would forfeit our place in line. So Brent and I decided, since we only needed two tickets each and each bracelet got you four tickets, that maybe it might be best to manage just, you know, one bracelet. This way we wouldn't have to cut as much school, and more important, we'd only have to figure out how to sneak out of the house half as many nights. Now there's one other thing that I should tell you, that on the very day that tickets were scheduled to go on sale, I was also supposed to take my SAT college test. Now, you might think it completely irresponsible of me to contemplate this adventure, given I'd have such a profound and important event on that Saturday. But look, it wasn't like I would, you know, hadn't been preparing, and Brent said that he would cover the Friday night, so I was assured of getting at least one good night's sleep before the test. So there I was in line with this thick SAT book, doing practice exams. The head of security thought I was absolutely nuts. The kids in line were just, you know, couldn't believe it. But there I was working practice tests, doing sample math problems, English problems. And at the beginning of the week, actually, I got a lot of studying done. But as the week progressed, more and more kids were showing up, and that line transformed into a community. Really, it was a 24-hour party, so it was impossible to really do any studying. But on the Friday, Brent was scheduled to relieve me at 7 p.m. And of course, he was late. 8 o'clock came around, there was no Brent. 9 o'clock, no Brent. 10 o'clock, I go into that phone booth at the Spectrum parking lot. And I call my girlfriend, Maria, and say, hey, what's going on? Brent's supposed to be here. She goes, oh, thank God you called. We didn't know how to get a hold of you. You know, without the cell phone, I mean, you know. So she tells me that Brent got busted smoking marijuana at school, and his parents freaked out, and he was grounded, locked down. There was no way he was getting out tonight. So there I was, 17 years old, 10 o'clock at night, supposed to take the SAT in the morning, probably the most profound and most influential thing that could happen to my whole life. And all I could think about was, I got to get these Hoot tickets. And so when dawn broke and the sun rose over the spectrum, there were over 4,000 kids in line. Now, just before the box office opened, somebody offered me $250 for my tickets, and in 1975, that was a ton of money. But there was no way I was selling out. I scored second row center, but I had no time to celebrate. I had to get my butt over that bridge and into Cherry Hill East High School with a handful of freshly sharpened number two pencils and take that test. So on the Monday, that story of what I had done took on heroic proportions. We were really impressed. Now, my best friend, Brett, he was pretty sheepish, but he was my best friend, and I gave him those tickets. So I took my two tickets, and I put them in a cigar box and stashed it away in the top dresser of my bedroom, and we had 6 weeks till the show. Now, a couple of weeks later, my stepsister decided she wanted to throw a party because my mom and stepdad were going away for the night. Now, kids in those days didn't need Facebook or Twitter to know that there was a party or what was happening. They just knew where the party was. Now, of course, I was at a Frank Zappa show right down front at the Spectrum that night, so I missed the 100 or so kids that showed up at my parents' house. I also missed the cops that shortly thereafter showed up. By the time I got home, the excitement had died down. Now, out of reflex, I went up to my bedroom, opened up the top dresser, pulled out the cigar box to check on my tickets, and to my dismay, they were gone. Now, you can imagine, I freaked out. I got my stepsister to write a list of everyone that she could remember that was there, and on the Monday, me and my friends conducted an interrogation of a bunch of suspects that would have made Dick Cheney proud. Unfortunately, we had no evidence and we had no witnesses. And so there was very little I could do. Now, Brent, to his credit, he said, look, dude, you can take my tickets. And I appreciated that, but I just didn't think that that was the way it should go down. And then he said, well, look, at least you and I should go. And I appreciated that, but you know, my girlfriend Marie, she loved The Who, and his girlfriend loved The Who too, and that just didn't seem right either. But there wasn't much I could really do. I mean, you know, we had no witnesses. And at some point, I was so bummed, but I came up with this idea, well, why don't I write to that security guard, the head of security, who was, you know, I actually had asked him a couple of times to time me when I was doing these practice tests. Maybe he'd remember me. So I wrote him a letter, and I pleaded my case. And he promptly responded. And in that case, he said, look, I remember who you are, and I'm going to give you your tickets because you earned it. You made a lot of sacrifices. And so I couldn't believe it. I got the passes. I mean, can you imagine getting passes? So he said, and don't worry, if anyone shows up with the real tickets, we'll escort them to out of the section. So on the night of the show, Marie and I showed up, and it was like a reunion. None of those kids had scalped any of those tickets. They were all there because they loved the show, The Who. And they were like, when I told them about the tickets getting stolen, they were like, well, kill this guy. You know, I said, no, don't worry. It's probably they're just going to sell it to some, you know, scalp it out front. And of course, when the kids showed up, they did get they were scalped, and the guys kicked them out, the security. So there me and Marie are, second row center for The Who. And when those first power chords of Can't Explain thundered through the spectrum, people flooded into our section like you couldn't believe. And we had to not only stand up off of our seats, we had to stand on our seats to be above the fray. But it was okay, because we weren't just watching The Who, we were part of the show. And at some point in between a song, like the fourth or fifth song, I looked up at Daltrey, and I connected with his eyes, and I said, yeah, dude. And he looked at me and smiled. And I looked it over to Marie to give her a thumbs up. But she was getting like tasseled with all these people. The next thing you know, she slipped off of her chair and I reached out to grab her. And she fell and I just couldn't get her. And she disappeared into the blur of bodies. I dived quickly into the audience to try to find her, but I couldn't see her. It was complete mayhem, and the music was so loud. So I dropped underneath the crowd to my knees, and the floor was cold, and it was hard, and I could see her huddled. And I ran and pushed people around, and I grabbed her, got her to her feet, and I pushed people away and got her away from the stage. But the music was so loud, I couldn't say to her, you know, I was saying to her, are you okay, are you okay? But she couldn't hear me. And but I could see from her eyes that she couldn't, you know, she couldn't see. She was definitely not in good shape. So I looked back at the front of the stage and I said, all right, let's just calm down and we'll figure out how to get back. But I looked at the front of the stage, it was complete chaos. Now remember, this was 4 years before 11 kids got trampled to death at a Who concert. So, security completely lost control. So I looked at Maria and I said, hey, look, you know, I took her hand and I said, let's just go up to the up to somewhere higher ground, and from there we'll just watch the show in safety. So we never got back to the front of the stage, but we saw the whole show. It was really great. So I got two postscripts to this story. One is, I never did find out who stole those Who tickets. And second, much to my mother's disappointment, as you can imagine, I didn't get an SAT score that could get me into the Ivy League. I had to bust my butt through undergraduate at San Diego State to get myself to a position where maybe I could get into a graduate school at Harvard, and I did get in there. And my mom came up for the graduation in Cambridge, and she was quite proud. And that was actually the same year that the Who got a Lifetime Achievement Award. 13 years had passed by since I'd squandered that test, and because I was waiting in line for Who tickets. Thank you very much.